Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue White Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the show. On today's episode, I was hoping to be chatting about the Lauri Markkanen situation and there being some sort of resolution to it all, but alas, another week churns on and still Lauri Markkanen remains a free agent. The Bulls are still holding out on a sign and trade, it seems, and so the stalemate ensues. So whilst we wait on the Markkanen stuff to unfold, I thought today we could get away from all the free agency talk and all the roster transaction stuff just for a little bit, and instead focus on the mechanics of how all of these moves that we've seen in the offseason, how essentially they're going to come together and how the players that Bulls have brought in, how that's going to impact the style and play the team puts on the floor next season on both ends of the floor. So that's the plan for today. And really, I guess over the next 7 or so weeks between now and the tip-off of the new season, this is where we fans can get to speculating about how these new-look Bulls will bridge the gap between having a roster with the most talent it's had for years to being a fully functional team that realizes its full potential. So with that in mind, I want to talk schemes, I want to talk offensive sets, I want to talk about defensive philosophies and how we can expect the Bulls to beat some of these negative narratives that exist out there, let's say, at the moment. So, and joining me to discuss all that and more is one of the best analytical minds covering the team today, Stefan Noh. Stefan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Mark. Looking forward to chatting some Bulls with you.
I know, mate. It's been a while that I've had you on the show, so I appreciate you coming on. Like I said there from the outset, I obviously want to dive deep into how this is all going to work. But because we haven't chatted for a while, you know, just give me your high level thoughts about the offseason itself from your perspective. Obviously, the Lonzo signing, getting DeRozan in via a sign and trade. All the moves itself, how have you found the Bulls, their offseason, how it's all operated? Are you a fan? How are you feeling about it all?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to see from Karnišovas as soon as he took over was just for the team to pick a direction. It seemed like the Bulls were just hedging in so many different ways. Like, they valued flexibility way, way too much, and it just ended up not doing anything in the process. And you saw him kind of start to make that move towards winning now. With the Vooch trade, and then obviously like he has advanced that a lot, and I kind of mixed feelings about it, to tell you the truth, but again, I am glad that they are finally picking a direction, and I think that they're at least giving themselves a chance. Like, I think previously just like being so indecisive in their path, they just weren't accomplishing anything. They were basically setting themselves up to fail, so at least they have a shot now at doing something interesting. I really liked the Ball signing. I love the Caruso signing. That one came from out of nowhere. And he was actually a guy that I was really hoping that they would target. But I figured it was kind of a pipe dream because there was no smoke around that. And then the DeRozan thing, I've kind of talked myself into it. I was kind of a little bit leery, I guess, seeing the price like a lot of people at first when it first came across my timeline. But subsequently, you know, having some time to think about it and just watching a little bit more of what he did with the Spurs, I'm a lot more positive on the move than I was definitely at first. And I think, as we'll probably get into later, that there are definitely ways to make that signing work. Although, I think some of the criticisms around that signing are valid. But I think that, as we'll probably get into later, there's just it's definitely not like a situation that they cannot get the most out of if they're just a little bit creative with how they use them.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I certainly accept that there's a way or a path where this all doesn't work. Like, I'm not expecting this to just come in and be fully complete and the team to just function and fit seamlessly, because there are serious questions that I think need to be answered, and that's part of what I wanted to discuss today, because I think, obviously, it's fun to see all these big names come through and through Chicago, and I would argue this has probably been the best offseason in Bulls franchise history. I mean, at least for the last 20 or so years, in terms of getting in talented guys. Like, you know, obviously 2010, 2011, the Bulls got through a, you know, Boozer and that nice bench, but, you know, guys like Ball, DeRozan, they headlined that this free agency class to a degree, and the Bulls went out and got their guys, and well, they landed them. Like, you mentioned Caruso there. I didn't even think about how Caruso was a Bull, because I just assumed there was no way that was going to happen. But yeah, to your point, like, the fact that they got it done and he became a Bull, like, that was seriously impressive. So in that sense, I just appreciate the team acting like a big market team for once. And maybe it fails spectacularly and it doesn't work, but at least they've had a crack, I guess, is the point. But let's dive into how this is all going to work, because, you know, for me as well, like, obviously I've been very jubilant about this offseason and the way it's all happened. I think that's probably been the most exciting bit for me, like the fact that they didn't really even use cap space to go out and get DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, and Caruso. Like, that was encouraging. Like, they operated like the Miami Heat, let's say, who very rarely ever has cap space but still finds a way to get their guy. So that was really encouraging. But now my attention is starting to focus on, all right, like, how is this going to work? And you wrote a really good piece up on your Substack the other day around how the Bulls can sort of utilize DeRozan and how he sorts of fits with LaVine, Vucevic, and Lonzo and those sorts of things. So maybe we can start with the offense first, because that's, I think, naturally where we're all going to, you know, focus our minds at least, because this is probably the most offensive talent the Bulls have had. I don't even know since when, to be honest with you. Like, this is the most offensively stacked team that I can remember in a long, long time. Again, let's see if it can come together. But, I mean, how do you think it can come together? You alluded to it in your piece, and I don't necessarily want to give away that entire thing if people haven't necessarily read it just yet. But how can the Bulls, how can DeRozan, LaVine, etc., you know, make it work on the floor?
I think they can definitely be a top 10 offense, that group. And yeah, I was watching some of the old games from last season after the Vooch trade, and the Bulls finished 21st according to NBA stats in offense last year, which obviously is not very good. But when I watched the team last year, their offense was pretty simplistic, and the reason for that was they only had one practice with that new group through post-trade deadline, so they didn't have a lot of time to put a lot of stuff in. It was a lot of you know, just simple pick and rolls, spread offense with Zach LaVine and Vooch running pick and rolls. And yeah, I kind of mentioned this idea of heliocentric offenses. It's kind of become a bit cliche, a bit of a buzzword in NBA circles. But that idea is that, yeah, you just have like one playmaking engine that creates for everybody else on the team. And I guess the classic examples are like Luka Doncic or Trae Young in the playoffs, you know, where they just let him run, you know, 50 mm-hmm. pick and rolls every yeah. game. Mm-hmm. And so the Bulls were kind of doing that a little bit last year. They were doing some other stuff too, but a lot of just basic pick and rolls with Zach and Vooch. And I think that with a full training camp, with a lot more practices, they're going to go away from that, because they did play with a lot more movement before the trade deadline, when they had you know, Wendell Carter, they were doing a lot of this delay action with him. They're doing that with Vooch too, where, you know, he catches up top and they're playing with a bunch of shooters around him, and he gets to make the decision on where the ball goes. So, you know, I think that the thing about Zach LaVine too is he's a really, really potent off-ball player. He didn't get mm-hmm. to do that at all last season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another reason why these guys are going to fit really well together, because Zach is just an unbelievable shooter off movement. Like, not a lot of guys can come off screens or, you know, do these sidestep threes or just shoot right over guys like Zach can. And he didn't have an opportunity to get that kind of space on his 3-point attempts last year. And he still shot an amazing percentage. I don't have it in front of me, but he was over 40%. So I definitely, there's been a lot of talk I've heard of like this bubble, or not bubble, but, just like this shooting effect without fans last season, and how the offensive numbers were kind of inflated. And along with that is the idea that maybe Zach's season was a little bit of a fluke last year, because just offense was up in general around the league. I just, even if that is true to some extent, I think the looks that he gets this year are going to be so much better. Just, yeah, being able to come off screens, being able to get the ball, when other people create for him, instead of just always having to create his own offense. And a lot of that is going to come from, you know, DeRozan. It's pretty well documented that he's a very good playmaker. He was basically playing point forward for the Spurs for the past couple of years. This one set that you referenced, this Hawks set that I was focused a lot of my article on, this was actually a really popular trend like 2 or 3 years ago with Billy Donovan kind of made it popular with this 2017-18 Thunder team that had Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, and Paul George. And that was another case where people were kind of saying, like, how is this offense going to fit? Like, these guys, you know, they all need the ball. There's only one ball. I feel like I've heard this critique so many times about so many different offenses, and they just turn out to be awesome. Like the Nets are another example where people are just saying, like, you know, there's only one ball, and, you know, they're the best offense in NBA history. It doesn't really matter, you know, if you have these great offensive talents. But Donovan made it work. By just going against this idea of heliocentric offense and having these guys play off each other, have a lot of movement, screen for each other. And I think that's the way that the Bulls are going to get the most out of their pieces. They're not going to play a style that has really become very popular throughout the league. And I think they're instead going to be kind of interesting. Like, I like when there's a diversity of styles throughout the league. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice that the Bulls have a good shot. They have the right personnel to be able to do that, to add diversity and share playmaking duties. Get these guys playing off each other by having one guy create an advantage and having other guys screen for each other. You know, when great players screen for each other, it really puts the defense in a bind because there's a lot of pressure to get those assignments correct. If you screw it up, then, you know, it's just going to be game over. So
yeah.
I think Donovan has been very good in the past at doing that. And I have confidence that he's going to do that again.
Yeah, fair enough. And look, I completely agree. And to that point, I mean, LaVine can work in isolation, so can DeRozan. You know, he can get the ball to Vucevic on the block to maybe isolate down there and do his own thing. But I kind of feel like the Bulls don't really have much of a choice but to instill more of a team-based game anyway, just due to the fact that, you know, a LaVine or DeRozan, like, even I understand DeRozan's like lifted his game as a playmaker, but he isn't a Luka, he isn't a Harden, he isn't a Trae Young or even a LeBron. Like, you can't center your offense around them. So I kind of feel like they have no choice but to be one of those team-centric type offenses. And to that point, like, a lot of this hinges on, like, at least in my mind initially, like, I just assumed coming into this season that it was always going to, everything would boil down to the LaVine Vucevic pick and roll. And look, it still may in some senses, but after the DeRozan signing, I guess where my mind started to go was, all right, well, where I was previously thinking LaVine was going to get more opportunities on ball, and you alluded to it before, like, now with DeRozan in play, the fact that he's lifted his game as a playmaker, the fact that he's probably better on ball because, you know, he can be a playmaker, he can step into his mid-range shots, and when he's off ball, he's not, obviously not much of a three-point threat. And maybe it makes more sense for DeRozan to continue to be that lead option from a playmaking point of view for the Bulls and to really exercise or use LaVine as a turbocharged Klay Thompson, let's say, someone who can come off the ball and start flying off screens and still getting the same level of usage, but maybe getting that usage in a different way. So in a lot of ways for me, the way this comes together, the way it works is on DeRozan and LaVine's ability to maybe sort of share that duty of being that lead guy. So, I mean, how do you think that'll unfold? Do you think Zach will be cool with having more of an off-ball role? And do you think Donovan even comes into the situation initially and says, well, look, DeRozan is going to be our primary creator, let's say, based on, you know, his skills, what he does well, but also his limitations and the fact that LaVine is, you know, such a complete offensive scoring force that, you know, because of his ability there and maybe some of the limitations DeRozan has, that Zach will be off-ball more. Do you think he has enough gravitas to come in straight away and maybe structure the offense that way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Zach has always been about what's best for the team. You know, he has kind of a weird reputation of being a selfish player, but like the past couple of years, every team has guarded him the same way. They just blitz him and try to get the ball out of his hands. And he's very good about making the right pass out of those blitzes and allowing his teammates to just play to an advantage. So I think if the team needs him to play off ball, he's willing to do that. You saw him do that in the Olympics too, where he took a very different role from what he's used to. They just made him basically like a focus on defense. He was picking guys up full court and he was doing it very, very willingly. And, you know, they won a gold medal for it. And I think it's interesting that you bring up that Klay Thompson comparison too. The reason why I got on this whole idea is Will Gottlieb, friend of your podcast and my former podcast co-host. He was bringing this idea up on another great Bulls podcast, Bulls 101, which I think you were their previous guest before him.
So that's also great. Maybe the week before. Yeah.
Shout out to those guys. They're great. Will is based in the Bay Area and he has watched the Warriors very closely. And they're another example of a team that does not play this heliocentric style. And people are always clamoring, you know, why doesn't Steph Curry just run 50 or 60 ball screens every single game? Yeah. And that's just not the way they play, you know, and they've been a very, very good team, obviously. by not embracing that style. So I think that you can be very successful in that style. And that is a great way that Steve Kerr has utilized all those weapons. The other reason why that works really well is because those guys are all very willing screeners. Steph Curry is a great screener, very mm-hmm. underrated screener.
Yeah.
And you saw Zach doing that a lot more last year. I'd never really seen him be very enthusiastic about setting screens. But after Donovan came in, they were doing that a lot. He was setting a lot of cross screens for Vucevic to get him open on the post, just for other guys too, and popping out to three. And those were their best plays, honestly. Like, a lot of their ATOs that they were successful in used that type of action. So just the personnel that they have very unselfish guys. They have veterans that know how to play, know how the spacing on the floor works. They're all willing screeners for each other. So I think that, yeah, it just makes sense to embrace this different style of offense that these guys have a lot of experience in. I mentioned the story that the Spurs play the style too. So DeRozan is very used to playing a motion-based offense. That's what Popovich has always done. And they've also used this Hawks set that I talked about in the story. So it just makes sense from a lot of different points of view. And yeah, I think that's definitely the way to go. I think that to answer your original question, I guess, I think that Zach would be way more forward. It seems like at this point in his career, all he really wants to do is win, and whatever it takes to do that. These guys have a ton of faith in Billy Donovan. He has a lot of buy-in, which is super, super important. So yeah, I think that if Donovan thinks that that's the best way to go, which, you know, I haven't talked to him about it or anything, so I don't know, but it would seem that that would make sense, then it can definitely work.
Yeah, just look, theoretically it makes sense because, you know, LaVine can score in any which way. DeRozan maybe is a little bit limited, but what he does well, he does very well. So in that sense, maybe LaVine has to sacrifice some and be more of that off-ball guy. But that's always what I've wanted from him, to be honest with you. Like, the amount of times I've complained about the fact that this guy hasn't had a chance to just spot up and shoot from three because he's just had to always be on ball because the Bulls just haven't had another suitable playmaker to maybe take the ball out of his hands or justifiably take the ball out of his hands. But that necessarily isn't the case anymore. Like, you've got DeMar there. Obviously, Lonzo is floating around as well. Like, he will be a connecting piece, but I'm sure he'll want his opportunities in running the offense as well. So it should all come together, theoretically. It's just going to, you know, ultimately we'll see how it all plays out in terms of how these guys are willing to coexist with each other. And yeah, I take your point. Like, there's never really been anything rumored anywhere between, you know, LaVine being a locker room guy or a bad locker room guy. Same with DeRozan and Lonzo. There's been no talk of that ever. Same with Vucevic. So to your point, like, they've got a bunch of good vets on the squad, and, you know, if anyone's going to make it work, it should be this quartet here. But you know what's been interesting for me is, like, I haven't necessarily had too many concerns about the fit of DeRozan with LaVine and Lonzo or anything. It's probably been more my question about Vucevic and how he fits with DeRozan, LaVine, and Lonzo. I think that's where my thinking about this whole thing is, because, you know, when you bring in someone like Lonzo, and even before you got DeMar, but, like, when you bring in someone like Lonzo, let's say, who probably wants to play more in space, wants to play more in a tempo offense. Obviously, someone like LaVine would just be absolutely amazing in a fast-paced type of offense. Whereas you think about Vucevic, how he changed the Bulls' offense and how it became a more half-court-based offense, a more post-driven offense. I wonder if there's going to be some clashes of styles between, say, someone like Vucevic and Lonzo, and how that all works together as well, to the point where you know, I'm not even really questioning DeMar's fit, because I think he, LaVine, and Lonzo will work it out on the perimeter. But I'm kind of wondering how Vucevic fits in all this thing. Like, are they still going to run a post-heavy offense? Are they still going to slow down the pace and try not to get out to transition as much, because maybe they want to limit that from a defensive standpoint, but also from an offensive perspective, they want to get more into a, you know, a post-driven type offense. So, like, I don't know if I'm being foolish in thinking about that, or if I'm just being, you know, just trying to, you know, cover all the risks, let's say, coming into this season. But I'm kind of the view that, you know, if anyone, I won't say doesn't fit, because I think they will all fit and make it work. But if there's any risk about this not working, I kind of wonder if it's from a Vucevic perspective.
I'm not really worried about that, to tell you the truth. I mean, I do agree with you that he's not exactly going to be fueling their transition attack. Like, he's definitely going to be lagging behind, and maybe he'll get some trail threes or something. But you don't need all five guys over there, you know, to run a transition break. I think they're going to do what most teams do, which is probe the defense, see if there's anything there in the first couple seconds of the shot clock. And if there's not, then, you know, they'll pull it back and try to set something up. But I think Vucevic is a good fit because he's a really, really good shooter above the break in particular. And that allows them to play with great spacing. They can't exactly play five out because, you know, obviously DeRozan doesn't shoot threes. But when he has the ball, they got four guys on the perimeter that can space for him, which is huge. And he had that, DeRozan had that a little bit with LaMarcus Aldridge, but Aldridge is also like a reticent 3-point shooter, although he's been a little bit better later in his career. But yeah, Vucevic is going to open up a lot more space than any of those guys that DeRozan played with in the past. And the other reason why I really like the Vucevic is he's a way, way better passer than people realize. And like I was mentioning before, the Bulls run a lot of these delay sets where they give the ball to the center, top of the key. You saw Wendell Carter do this a lot, and the offense was not, you know, spectacular with him in that role. He had a couple nice assists. That was a lot better, as we saw. But yeah, Vucevic in that role, I think, is going to be very good. Also, like, defenders can't sag 15 feet off him like they did with Wendell Carter, because he's just going to, you know, drill these above the break threes if they do that. So yeah, it's going to open up the middle of the floor for the rest of the players. Yeah, and I think that you know, the other guys can run. Like, yeah, Vucevic is going to just stay back there, chill out. And if they don't get anything right away, then he'll rejoin the rest of the team.
Well, see, the way I sort of rationalize it in my mind, like to try and you know, calm my own nerves, let's say, or go over the risk in my own mind, is like, all right, well, maybe Donovan could sort of initiate, you know, I won't say complete revamps based on the who's on the court, but maybe for certain units and depending who's on the floor, then, you know, maybe those five-man units, depending, yeah, who's out there, like, they can have identities of their own. Like, you know, obviously the Nuggets play a certain way when Jokic is on the court, but maybe they have to shift the way they play when he's off the court. And to that point, like, maybe they could have a sort of stagger style offense where you have Vucevic and DeMar running that initial pick and roll action, but then where maybe those guys sit and maybe you could stagger Levine and Lonzo into that second unit, then maybe in that case you can play with a bit more tempo and get out there and maybe shift your style somewhat, I suppose. So I don't know, that's the way I've sort of thought about maybe, I know teams don't want to have multiple identities because it can be, you know, quite confusing. It could lead to, you know, further problems that can be unforeseen, let's say, but to best maximize the natural skill sets of guys, like, maybe can all be manipulated through rotations and the way Donovan sort of staggers his lineups. And I think he actually has a chance now to have a situation where he has a legit creator on the floor at all times. Like, last season, it was just Levine. And when he sat, the offense, you know, went to the toilet. Whereas now you've got the option to have one of Levine or DeMar on the court at all times. And that's just a huge luxury for the Bulls.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I think I actually heard this from Ricky O'Donnell, that, like, just playmaking has become such a huge, hugely important in the playoffs in particular. Like, you can never have enough playmaking and shot creation. So it's definitely nice that the Bulls can space that out on the bench rotations, as you said, just stagger those guys and always have somebody, because the bench, I mean, the Bulls bench was actually pretty good when they put all their veterans on there, but at the start of the year, it was pretty brutal. So they definitely could have used more shot creation. Yeah, I think the problem with the idea of just playing multiple styles, though, I think it's great. Like, it's a good idea, but Vucevic's backup is, like, even slower than he is, Tony Bradley. So
That's true.
I think they definitely need some more depth. Like, that is going to be a big problem, especially in the playoffs. I mean, we've seen how important it is to, especially defensively, to be able to play a lot of different styles. Like, Brook Lopez, you know, he wasn't even playing in the big minutes for the Bucks. He was the ability to go smaller, that was so key. Like, if they had not been able to do that, they definitely would not have won the championship. So the Bulls could definitely use a different type of big man. You know, Simanovic, will probably get into him later, but I don't think he's quite ready to contribute, and especially not, you know, like, closing games as their five or something like that. So they need to make some more additions. They still have two or three roster spots left, depending on, I think, if they use their trade exception. So they, big man that allows them to play a different style defensively is that would be the top of my list and things they still need going forward.
Yeah, completely agree. And I'm assuming, or at least I'm hoping, the Markkanen situation is sort of holding that up. Maybe they're waiting to see how that unfolds, if they return a player or not. Like, there was reports the other day from Tim Cato in The Athletic that the Bulls would be interested in Maxi Kleber. I mean, in a Lauri Markkanen swap with Lauri going to Dallas, like, that would be exactly what we're discussing here, where...
He is really good, by the way,
yeah, Kleber. Sure. Like,
he would be a great fit.
Yes, 100%. Like, whether he's a backup power forward, you can even slide him up to up to center. Hell, he was even guarding Kawhi Leonard at times in the playoffs. Now, he didn't necessarily stop Kawhi, but the fact that you can throw him out on a big wing for a pinch here and there, like, it just gives you someone that's very different to Vucevic and gives you a different look and feel to your exact point. And I completely agree with that. Like, even if you don't go the Kleber route, like, if that's not possible, then having some sort of rim running big, like, I was very hopeful of a JaVale type situation. That would have been nice. So, like, just to offset what Vucevic brings. But completely agree, they need some sort of different look at center, or even up front more generally. But maybe we can take that logic and transfer that into, you know, how this all comes together defensively. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be more of the same, in the sense that they're going to maintain their drop heavy sort of coverage, just due to the fact that you are somewhat limited with Vucevic. And maybe just more generally limited with the personnel the Bulls have on the perimeter. Like, I'm not sure if you want to really be a switching time team with LaVine and DeMar out there on the perimeter either. So in that sense, they are somewhat limited defensively in terms of how they can play. I know Bulls fans, the drop coverage was a big talking point last season. I'm assuming it's going to remain. But what are your thoughts about how they're going to shape up defensively? Is it going to be a drop-based defense? Do you see any scope for it looking any differently? Can they even play small, as you referenced there before?
So I think the drop defenses can be very effective in the regular season. The Bucks, as I was talking about with Brook Lopez, they were number one. And I think they were number one 2 years ago, and they were top three last year, just off my memory, playing primarily drop. So it works in the regular season, and you can get really good at it. But in the playoffs, when teams have a lot of time to prepare for it, it becomes a much dicier situation. So I think that, yeah, the Bulls can be like a okay to maybe like a little bit above average defense, but if they want to have success in the playoffs, then they need some scheme versatility. They need some sort of option of a smaller lineup, which, again, that would be where a guy like Kleber would be perfect, because he could play small ball five like very competently.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Simonovic, you know, like, I know some people want him. He was playing five for the summer league team, but yeah, he was playing a shallow drop for basically the entire time, and when he was switched onto people, like, he didn't look great. So he's not really an option either, I don't think.
This is where
they need somebody that can switch.
That
would have been great in that role. Mm-hmm. They just need somebody for sure.
Yeah, look, I mean, ideally, you know, maybe Patrick Williams could slide up to five, but he's probably not ready, you know, physically, but also probably, you know, mentally, you know, understanding how to play center, let's say. Like, that would be nice. And maybe you could take Vuce off the floor, shift DeMar up to four and put Patrick Williams in five, and maybe throw Caruso out there. Like, that would be fun and interesting, but he's probably not ready for that responsibility just yet. But, you know, maybe that's a couple of years away. But I certainly take your point. Like, they need some sort of versatility from a defensive standpoint, but I'm not sure it exists at this moment. So I guess, like, my reservations about this team, not that I have many, is probably more so on the defensive side of the ball. I think they're all going to come together and make it work offensively. Yes, Caruso, you know, he's going to lift the point of attack defense so much that it's not going to be, it's going to be, you know, just amusing to look, watch him play defense versus what we're sort of been used to sort of last season, let's say. Even Lonzo Wost, he's not the greatest point of attack defender. He's average to good, and even that in itself will be very helpful. So I've kind of got some hope that the drop will look a lot better than what we saw last season, because, you know, the point of attack shouldn't be killed like it was last season, which should give someone like Vucevic a more time to sort of make his decisions in that drop coverage, where, yes, it may be better in the regular season. Maybe it's problematic in the playoffs, depending on matchups and those sorts of things. But I do think there is scope here for the Bulls to be an average defense. And I know people like to reference the fact that they were like, you know, 11th or 12th in defensive rating last season. But I kind of throw that out because last season was just a weird season more generally with COVID and that sort of stuff. You know, back-to-backs all the time. And the team itself just changing like their lineups virtually every other week, whether it was due to trades, COVID, whatever it might have been. So I don't really know if I consider what they did last season to be representative of how it can sort of unfold this season. But based on this squad right now, I think there is some scope for them to be okay defensively. And if they can just be okay defensively whilst being a top 10 offense, like you mentioned before, then I don't know, where do you think this team could sort of position itself in the Eastern Conference, noting that the East itself has improved as well?
So I think they could be a very good regular season team. Again, I think there are issues that would crop up in playoff series, but the comparison I made, I actually see a lot of comparisons, a lot of similarities between this team and the one I mentioned before, that 17-18 Thunder team. That team won 48 games and then got bounced in the first round, with kind of disappointingly. But yeah, I think their defense, I agree with you, their defense can be average. You know, I think Vooch, he is a very decidedly average center, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. He's not as bad as people think. I think Zach is maybe a little bit below average, but the biggest struggles the Bulls had defensively, people were giving them a very hard time, but I think part of that is that people don't realize just how good offenses around, like Bulls fans specifically, don't realize how good offenses have gotten around the league. So just seeing teams scoring on you over and over is kind of jarring. But if you watch the rest of the league, I mean, it's happening to every team. Like, as you said, they finished 12th, and you know, there's like daily freakouts about how bad the defense was, but it was actually like better than average. And a big component of how good a defense is I think related a lot to age. So the times where the Bulls defense struggled a lot was when they were playing these very young players. Kobe White was, I mean, he was among the worst defenders at his position. And that's, I mean, that's, you know, that's going to happen just because of how young he is. You know, I think Patrick Williams too, like, he was not very good defensively, to be quite frank. Like, he had moments where he was extremely good, where he showed these amazing flashes, and he's going to be better for sure. How much better is a question. Like, I think they're counting on him a lot to be at least average. And that can happen. You know, we don't really know how much he's going to grow. And then the other guys, like I said, like, it's a function of age. They're getting veterans in there that know how to play. So I think that's going to help the defense too. It's going to mask a lot of the stuff that is problematic about, you know, DeMar can't guard one-on-one. I don't really care if DeMar can guard one-on-one, you know, like, the more important thing is that these guys get the rotations right when somebody gives up an advantage to the player they're guarding. And it seems like the defenders that they've picked up, especially Ball and Caruso, those guys are awesome help defenders. That's way, way more important than being good on ball defender. So I don't know. I mean, I think their defense is going to be okay, to be honest.
Yeah. And look, where Patrick Williams has scope to grow is the fact that, you know, he's probably better suited to the power forward position. That's where he should be playing. And he's probably more of an inside help type defender than being a perimeter lockdown type of player, which the Bulls sort of forced him into last season, just due to the fact that the team had no wings on it and had no real perimeter defense. So he should be a better help defender than he is perimeter defender, let's say. And I kind of want to hold my reservations of what this defense can or can't be based on, again, how the roster shakes out, because, you know, my feeling about it will change very differently if, for whatever reason, you know, someone like Maxi Kleber or even a Paul Millsap becomes your backup power forward, versus a situation where, okay, Lauri Markkanen comes back on the qualifying offer, your backup bigs are Tony Bradley, Lauri Markkanen, and Marko Simonovic. Like, in that instance, my reservations would grow, let's say, whereas, you know, if you have a Kleber or a Paul Millsap and, you know, you've got Javonte Green on there from a defensive standpoint too, Troy Brown Jr., they can do some stuff on defense. Like, I don't know, like, obviously you'd have more of your defensive guys on the bench, and maybe to close games that becomes problematic, but there would still be players on the team, I guess, is the point, that can do some stuff defensively. Whereas, you know, in a situation where they maybe bring back Lowry, like, that's where I become a little bit more scared. So I'm kind of I'm at the point now where, and maybe we can transition to this, Stefan, and maybe get your thoughts about the Lowry situation. I started the podcast basically saying there's no update, and of course there is no update. But I mean, what are your thoughts about bringing back Lowry at this point? Is that a tenable situation? He's been pretty clear that he doesn't want to come back. But I mean, even for the qualifying offer, I've seen some noise from certain people that suggesting like that Lowry back on the qualifying offer because he can come in and shoot 40% from the three, like that would be a good option for the Bulls from a backup power forward perspective. I mean, I completely disagree with that, but I'm interested to get your thoughts on what you would do with Lowry, and if he does come back and the Bulls retain him as a backup option, would that be a good thing?
Okay, so I'm going to get the Bulls mob on me here. I'm going to drop a hot take here and say that, yes, I do think that bringing Lowry back on the qualifying offer would be a good situation for the Bulls. It also actually might be an okay situation for him based on what his options are. And I mean, they're only paying him $8 million a year. They're not going to be close to the tax, so that's not a concern if they bring him back. And I mean, he is the best free agent still out there. They're not going to find somebody better than him. I understand that he's not what Bulls fans wanted him to be, but the pendulum has swung way, way too far on the other side now. Like, he's still a useful rotation player. Like, if he's your seventh or eighth guy on your team, like, that's a pretty damn good seventh or eighth player. So the problem before was, like, they were trying to make him the number two guy, you know, and he's definitely not that. At least not on the Bulls. I think that, so the situation with Lowry is kind of interesting because he can take this qualifying offer, right? Or like he wants to get signed and traded and the Bulls have to help facilitate that. But the problem is that, you know, there's no teams with cap space. He's not going to get the money that he's looking for, even if he does get signed and traded. And these sign and trade deals, you have to sign for at least 3 years guaranteed. So you could say, you know, why doesn't Lowry just take kind of prove it deal, but he's going to have to play 3 years on a contract that he thinks he's undervalued at, right? So like, let's say he finds a way to facilitate like a $10 million a year sign and trade. Well, now, okay, he's stuck on that contract for 3 years. If he just plays a qualifying offer, plays really well, you know, he makes what he thinks is not his market value of $8 million, but he gets back on the market. Now, you know, he can potentially get a much bigger deal if he really does play as well as he thinks he can. So I think that in that respect, like it makes sense from Lowry's point of view. Obviously, like he has said, he's made it very clear that he does not want to come back to the Bulls, that he wants a fresh start. And that's also totally understandable. Like I don't really like the animosity that fans direct towards Lowry. Like, I mean, the guy tried hard. He didn't want to be a disappointment in Chicago. You know, he worked very hard and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. So, you know, if they could get somebody like Kleber, I think Kleber's the better player right now, but Lowry has more potential. He's younger. So that's why it would make sense from the Mavs perspective, why the Mavs would want to do it. But yeah, if they got Kleber, like I would be more than happy with that. If they bring back Lowry, you know, that's fine too. If they just, you know, get a trade exception for him and then don't use it, I think that would be really bad because they do, as I've said many times at this point, they do need to still add valuable rotation pieces. Otherwise, they're going to be kind of screwed. And he's basically their last option to be able to add somebody quality that's not going to be at the minimum. It's, you know, people point to these minimum signings and say like, oh yeah, you know, the Bulls can just sign that guy. But the fact is like, there's a lot of minimum signings and like most of them are not very good. Like there's a handful that end up being very good value for their teams, but 90% of those guys, like, you know, they're just not helping you over the course of a season. And the Bulls don't want to have to put themselves in a situation where they're preying on a 10% chance that the minimum guy they sign ends up being good. You know, they'd much rather get, I mean, if you get somebody in Lowry's salary slot, then it's a much, much safer bet that you're going to get good production out of that guy.
Are you suggesting if they don't bring, that they shouldn't bring back Ryan Arcidiacono on a minimum deal then? Is that what you're saying?
I was seeing all your tweets. I know you're a huge Simonovic fan based on your Twitter feed. I was just thinking, like, man, Mark has this little.
I need a guy.
In his heart. I just don't want to set you up for disappointment. I don't want to see you get hurt again, Mark. So I'm a little bit worried about you. But yeah, we will find you your next Arch on this roster. Don't worry.
Well, I mean, Caruso. Caruso is a supercharged version of Arch. But I guess where I disagree with the Larry stuff is, like, I don't know if it makes sense for him or the team. And this isn't driven by animosity about Larry wanting to be out. And I have no issues with that because, you know, if I was in Larry's situation, I'd want to be out too. But like, to me, it doesn't make sense for the Bulls just more generally because, you know, yes, he's a talented player. Obviously, he's probably the best player from a talent perspective they couldn't necessarily sign at this point, but just from a fit point of view, like, how does it work from a fit perspective? Because, you know, from a backup point of view, he would obviously, you can't play him with Vucevic. We kind of know that already based on what we saw last season.
Yeah,
you can't have him.
He would be a bench guy for sure.
Yeah, but like, he would be a bench guy, but at some point he would be crossing over with the starters, and like, you can't play him, DeMar, and Vucevic together. There's problems in that point of view. And then, like, from his perspective, like, if he wants to come back and, you know, make it on a prove-it type deal, if he's still going to be in a backup role where he's playing, you know, 20 minutes a game and the league sort of has already told him that he's a backup. I mean, in a lot of these situations that he potentially could find himself in a sign and trade going toward, like, he would still probably be a backup. So I don't know if he's really going to have a chance to maybe, you know, show out here in Chicago and prove that he should be a 15, 20 million type dollar player. Like, in that sense as well, it, from my point of view, it doesn't really make sense for player or team. So, like, whilst someone like Paul Millsap is probably the lesser player, let's say, in terms of, you know, pure talent at this point, like, to me, from a fit point of view, he would just be, you know, infinitely more valuable than bringing back Larry Markin on the qualifying offer. So, I'm at the point now where they need to break. They need to, you know, cut all ties, whether that happens via the sign of a trade or some other form. But I just don't think it's tenable to bring him back at this point. Not because of the fact that he's wanting to exit Chicago, a former Bull wanting to leave, but I just don't think it makes sense for this roster. And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I need a defensive guy coming off the bench. And if my first big coming off the bench is Larry Markkanen, then, you know, those defensive things that we talked about before, like, that becomes problematic.
Well, I think they can still get Millsap. I think Millsap's probably going to sign for the minimum somewhere. I mean, he's at the tail end of his career, so those options are not mutually exclusive. But, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, Mark, but the thing is, like, the options for the Bulls at this point are not great to fill out those last couple spots, and the options for Lowry are not great. So you're trying to find the best of, like, not perfect conditions. So yeah, all of Larry's options kind of suck. He's kind of gotten screwed here. So, yeah, just taking the one-year deal and then trying to rehab his value, I don't think it can get any worse. So I think that's why he would consider the option. And also, I don't even know if the Bulls are going to let him, are going to facilitate this sign and trade. You know, like, they can really play hardball with him and just force him to basically play on the qualifying offer at this point. And then, yeah, from, like, who would be the other center that you would want there? If not Lowry, you know, Lowry is not, I don't think he was not great as a five defensively, but certainly, I mean, they can use his shooting. Like, he allows them to play a different style. Like I was saying, like, he is a much better transition player than anyone they have on the team, on this spot. So I don't know. There's just not that many. I mean, if you look at the people that are still left in free agency, there's just not a lot out there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but at the same time, maybe I would be okay with trading for a TPE on the proviso that obviously the team uses that in season. So maybe it's a problem, you know, within the first 20, 30 games, but you can obviously still vamp up your roster thereafter. And I'm sure there's a bunch of bigs around the league that teams would be willing to get off, let's say, from a salary point of view. Like, you know, one of the Plumleys got moved pretty quickly. I'm not suggesting the Bulls should go after a Plumley of sorts, but like, there's bigs around the league earning $7, $8, $9, $10 million, let's say, that maybe you could take into that TPE, whether it's not now, maybe, you know, a couple of months into the season, so, potentially, who knows. But I don't know. I just don't think it makes sense schematically. I kind of want it to be over, and I'm hoping it's over soon. But maybe the next time I do this stupid podcast, it will be. But we'll find out in due course. But Stefan, nonetheless, mate, I appreciate you coming on and you know, helping me sort of dive into the more how this is all going to come together, rather than obviously, you know, this signing happened here or there. Like, whilst that's all fun and interesting for us to discuss in the moment, now is the time when it all sorts of start to make sense, or where we try to make it make sense, I suppose. So I appreciate you coming on, mates. Before you get away, though, tell the people when they can follow you online in the rare chance they're not already.
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter at StephNoh. It's StephNoh. And I have a Substack. It's free. You can sign up for the newsletter. No ads. Yeah, it's you can find it through my Twitter profile, or I also just tweet out the story, so you can just click on it that way. The only benefit of subscribing is you get a little email alert whenever I write, but if you don't need that, then if you're like me, if you're on Twitter 24/7, then you can just look at the old timeline and find my stuff there.
Very good. Well, I'm definitely like you on Twitter all the time, but I'm signed up and I get it via the email too. So I definitely implore people to do the same. So follow StephNoh on Twitter. If you're not doing so already, what the hell are you doing? But whilst you're out there following Stefan, do the same for me in the rare chance that you want to do that, I suppose, at MK Hoops on Twitter, at Bulls HQ Pod on Twitter as well. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord, you can drop me an invite you can drop me a DM on Twitter. I will let you know via an invite as to what the link is there. Also in the show notes within this episode, there'll be an invite to the Discord there. The Discord's growing every day, so if you want to be part of it, jump on there as well. So that just about does it for this episode of the show. Again, thank you to Stefan for coming on. Like I said, maybe the next time we speak, there will be some Larry news. That would be nice. It'd be interesting to have some sort of resolution to this whole thing, but fingers crossed. But nonetheless, when that happens, Bulls fans, we'll be back to speak about Larry. We'll be back to speak about anything else pertaining to our Chicago Bulls. So be on the lookout for that next week. But for now, that's about all we have for you at this point. Speak soon, Bulls fans.